people gain in knowledge to understand what's going on and the right kind of timing. But too often, Dana, people aren't talking about this. They're left to their own devices, and then they're kind of picking and choosing what moves to make at the right time. So let's eliminate the guesswork. Sit down with an investment professional, but not just anyone. You want to work with someone that has the heart of a teacher.
A Capital Fourth, America's longest-running national TV event on Independence Day, returns for its 39th broadcast on PBS, live from the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol Building. Among those performing this year include Vanessa Williams, who shares what it's like to be performing on the 4th of July.
July 4th has always been special to me because of the celebration and the fireworks that we get a chance to enjoy. I grew up with both of my parents as music teachers, so it's an honor to sing such a traditional American song for Capitol 4th, for America's birthday.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
On hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterdon provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
Hi, everybody. This is Jim Minadio. This is the Hot Hunterdon Radio Show. And the weather forecast, it's 85 right now with clouds, scattered thunderstorms. Later tonight, 30% chance of storms. I could see a few coming across PA to us, hit or miss, depending on where you are. Tonight, low of 68. Tomorrow, a high of 89. And we'll get started in just a bit.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
Hi, welcome back. This is Jim Minadio. Host of the Hack Hunterdon Radio Show. I'm the president of Zero Surge, manufacturer quality, power quality filters that are used for surge protecting sensitive electronics. With Zero Surge, you have peace of mind that your electronics are kept safe. For today's show, we will cover some news of the world of technology and innovation that you may not have read about. And my guest today is one of the co-owners of the Lone Eagle Brewing Company, Bob King. Say hello, Bob.
Hello, Jim.
Oh, wait. It would help. Say it again.
Hey, hello, Jim.
There you go. If I turn your mic up, that helps. Again, you can tell I'm new at this. And always, I'll end the show with some historical innovation story. And since tomorrow is 4th of July, it'll be a founding fathers feel to it. So let's get started. So some news. As most of you may have heard already, you know, if you follow business news, Lee Iacocca passed away at 94. Tuesday morning, according to his family. Little things that I didn't know that Lee Iacocca, and I guess Bob didn't know either. He was a on the founding team for the Ford Mustang with Ford. He did become president of Ford in December 1970, and then he got fired in a dispute with Henry Ford II, and so then he joined then-struggling Chrysler. And, you know, I know Bob's probably old. I'm old enough to remember even when Chrysler was going to go bankrupt and the federal government guaranteed loans to keep them afloat, you know, similar to what happened with GM recently in 2008, I think it was. And so Lee Iacocca turned the company around. His slogan was, if you can find a better car, buy it. That was the tagline of the TV commercials. And so one of his big first cars that he got Chrysler out of the slump with was the K car, which I remember was like a variety of different kind of very simple looking sedans. They were a lot smaller than they used to be, right?
Yeah, if I remember, and this is going back a few years, what was interesting about the K car, if I recall, the quality was maybe skeptical at best.
Yeah.
But the warranty he put behind it was far better than anyone in the marketplace, and he decided that's going to help make it a differentiator, right? And so that's what made that such a great selling car, because people say, well, I'm getting 100,000 on my drivetrain. Well, how often does a drivetrain fail?
Right.
But people heard that, and it just got them all.
Right, exactly. I remember that too, like thinking, because I think my parents, I remember my dad had a Dodge Polara, which was like this big, one of the last 70s big boat kind of cars. You know, we used to like camp at it. I mean, it was so, I mean, at least we felt like we'd go to like drive-in movies and like sleep on the roof because it was so big. And then we would, my mom got a Dodge Omni, I remember.
Well, you guys were a Dodge family then.
Yeah, so we were a Dodge family, I guess. And so that was also right when the K car came out, was the Dodge Omni. It was also his take on like the VW Rabbit or, you know, the small Toyota Tercel of the day. You know, it was like you got 30 miles to the gallon, you know. Ooh.
Well, back then, that was a big deal. Right?
Wow, you only have to go to the gas station, you know, twice a week instead of every other day. Stuff like that. And then, so then his other big innovation was the minivan. I mean, vans existed. You know, he had conversion vans. He had all these kind of things. He had the VW bus and those kind of vehicles. But he really made the minivan iconic with the Dodge Caravan and the Chrysler. It was just called the minivan.
It was the minivan. And you think about at that time what was so revolutionary was the fact that it was lower to the ground. It was made for families with kids. Women loved it, right? They could easily put their kids in there, get them in and out of their car seats. Plenty of space in the back. The door was easy to open on the side. A lot of little things they did that really made it extremely, I would say, more family or even more women friendly. That just exploded.
Yeah, because back then, you know, if you had a big family car, it was a station wagon.
Right.
And so the back seat was always like, how do you sit? And you're sitting facing backwards.
Yeah,
and the kids
I remember the kid riding the way back of the seat.
Yeah,
you
can't
do that today, but we thought it was fun. Who gets to ride in the back, right? No seatbelts, nothing.
You know, and it had a command of the road and things like that, exactly. But it also acted like a car because it was small enough to get into parking spaces. It wasn't these big cargo van type things. So that's...
So one more on Lee, because what was his business slogan, which was, I'll remember to this day because it was really popular. Right? He was really a leader, and he taught many, many business lessons, and I learned this in my years in the corporate world. But do you recall what his three things he said? Lead, follow, or get out of the way. I'm pretty sure that was lead at
that. That is definitely one of his slogans. And then later on in life, found out he actually did invest in an electric vehicle car company in 1999 called EV Global Motors. But then he ended up, I guess as he got older, doing more charitable work. So he did some stuff with, Ellis Island. Because remember he did the Statue of Liberty. He was on that committee to renovate the Statue of Liberty.
I wasn't aware of that, no.
Yeah, I remember that because I remember when they had the big anniversary. And then he also helped to do all that whole restoration with Ellis Island and how they have it a big park now. And so that was also something that he did. So he led a pretty long life and a pretty eventful one. So good for him.
Very successful.
Okay, so moving on to the next story. Just a quick one out of Anchorage, Alaska, actually. It's kind of near to me because I used to work for a company that sold drones. And so that's one of the topics, you know, I know a lot about. I know about how they're made, the evolution of them. And, you know, one of the big issues is how do we legislate them? Because you can go to the store, buy them, but they can do just as many things as, you know, important things like fire rescue, delivering medication during disasters, things like that. And people are worried about their privacy. This thing can fly over your house. You know, it can just hover over your house, take video. You know, what are the laws? And so the problem is up until, you know, we had drones, everything that was air-related was federally regulated. So it didn't matter if you were in New Jersey, Maryland, you know, California, the FAA was in charge of the airspace. With the drones, they've kind of relinquished some of their control, and some of the states then started creating laws. So there's this group called the Uniform Law Commission, which it's interesting. Somebody should do an expose on them because they're a group of lawyers that get together and write legislation and then send it to the states and say, here, this is a legal law that we want you to promote, or this is something, you know, you're interested in drones. This is, we agree, this is how we wouldn't sue you over it, basically. So it's almost like they're this like think tank of lawyers that create laws, and you know, they're not elected officials or anything, but they do create the laws that our elected officials then supposedly create.
Well, hopefully those are well-intentioned and good laws.
Well, that's the theory, obviously. And that's the thing with drones. There's a lot of good intention uses for it. And so they've actually finally come up with some set of guidelines. The one that was unworkable was the 200-foot line in the sky. So they're basically saying up until 200 feet, you could have 200 feet above your property as your airspace. And it's like, it's almost impossible to enforce that.
Well, yeah.
Because then I could just put the drone at 205 and then still take pictures.
Right.
So, you know, but it, most of it is to do with, you know, obviously the privacy, but also noise. That's another issue.
Noise, I think, I don't know if that addresses any of the federal aviation stuff or if that's a separate entirety. Because I don't know if you recall, there's a lot of geofencing and firmware that's supposed to be baked into a lot of these drones to prevent them from flying into areas like airports where it becomes very
well. On the good ones there are, but there's ones you can buy that have no fencing. So, yeah. You know, I could go to xheli.com and buy a drone for $40 that takes 720p video and fly it over your house.
You're not going to be able to pop the firmware out and put something else in its
place.
Right,
there is no firmware in it. I can guarantee you because I have one. I just know it just doesn't exist. So, so look for that. It's probably going to start hitting states soon. And then they'll start adopting it. The next article is a company in New York. It's called Pavilion, but they spell it P-V-I-L-I-O-N, as in photovoltaic. So it's a solar company. And what they're doing is they're putting solar into fabrics. And now think about that. If you have, you know, I talked last week about Musk doing solar on the roof and finally getting certification from the housing groups to certify his product. Imagine if it's on a soft fabric, what you can do. So this guy, so it's this little company, and so they can't just suddenly create all this different product. So their issue is, how do you create products and then work with innovative companies that are already doing things, like say a tent manufacturer? So you want to put a solar, so you know, you're having your Lone Eagle, you know, brew fest in Atlantic City, and you have your tent outside, you could run power off the tent. Right. Why not?
I'm thinking, I love to hike, right? Imagine hiking and charging your iPhone at the same time.
Well, that's what they're saying. They even have, like, jackets that are solar jackets. So you're walking, you know, your phone's getting charged by your solar jacket.
Sure, yeah.
You know, or just any soft fabric. So, you know, umbrella, well, obviously, yeah, umbrella, beach umbrellas, you know, all that thing. So,
and if they provide UV protection, now you got a double bonus, right? So you get protected from the rays, and you're getting energy from that at the same time.
So, let's see. So we have one other story, real quick, before the break, and that's related locally to our Assemblyman Zwicker. I guess the second time I've mentioned him. He is advocating for three bills for net neutrality. So, you know, if you follow net neutrality, you know that under the current federal administration, you know, the Trump administration, the Federal Communication Commission changed the rules and are allowing ISPs, internet service providers, to engage in content-based discrimination. And it's, you know, a big deal. A lot of people are upset. And basically it means that Verizon can charge you more if you want to watch Netflix, you know, since Netflix is 30% of the internet traffic.
Or throttle your bandwidth.
Or slow it down if it's causing too much headache on their network.
And they'll say, well, if you want to watch our stations, watch on our preferred network. That whole thing, I'm not sure how it got passed. There was a lot of people against it. And it just seemed like,
well, it's up to three commissioners to vote on it is what it ends up being. And so,
sounded like the lobbyist one on that one.
Yeah, so Zwicker is trying to do an interesting approach. Is he's trying to create a state law that would negate net neutrality, you know, to create net neutrality.
I think California, right after that came out, I think they were one of the first states that says, this doesn't apply to California, right?
Right. So, the thing is, I don't know how you're going to apply this because these are federal, you know, national companies. So I don't know how it's going to play out. It's obviously going to go to court. And I think they're doing it as a strategy of saying, okay, please sue us. Let's go to the Supreme Court. then they'll overrule, make it net neutrality, and then.
Well, yeah, this becomes interesting. When is the federal government extended its reach too far? Right, we say that right. Even here locally, right? When is the state extended its reach too far?
Exactly.
And so, if they were able to back off, can they impose it at the state level and say, "No, our state says you're not allowed to do that"? So, I would think any of the ISPs in a particular state, they would have to lift those restrictions if it got approved at the state level.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Okay, so let's take a quick commercial break, and then we'll be right back with Bob King, and we'll talk more about his brewery and everything that he's been working on.
This is Georgine Trinkle. I want to invite you to listen to Hot and Hunterd In every Monday from 4 to 5 p.m. You'll be treated to discussions on hot topics every week. Hot and Hunterd In provides a more in-depth look at issues that are happening right now. You can catch the show live and call in on what matters to you. Make sure to download the podcast to catch up on all our hot topics.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Okay, we're back. And here again with Bob King, who's the co-owner of Lone Eagle, a local craft brewery located on Stengel Road, Flemington, New Jersey. Not too far from here. Bob is responsible for all the production, engineering, IT, and all the things technical with the brewery. Prior to starting Lone Eagle Brewing, Bob spent 26 years with AT&T, Lucent, Alcatel-Lucent, I guess all their iterations, and 7 years with Merck. Most of those years leading teams delivering a variety of complex IT solution. And before we start, too, we thank him because he also hosts the meetups for Hack Hunterdon monthly at the last Thursday of the month. 7 o'clock, the first beer is free.
Well, it's not free. We're not allowed to give alcohol.
The first beer is you don't have to pay for it.
That's right.
So other people are paying for it.
That is correct.
To be technically.
Mark Sock, the director of the Hunterdon Economic Group.
Development,
thank you. They actually sponsor that and purchase the beer for everyone. So it makes – I'm a techie, right? So we don't charge for the space because I just enjoy it. I love the conversations. It's actually been, I think, very successful so far.
Yeah, we've had 31 meetups now. Yeah. So it's
Even the summer times it might get a little bit softer. I'm enthused by the turnout. It's consistent. We're usually 20 to 30 people that show up. The topics have varied significantly, and we encourage anyone that has a topic and that wants to talk.
Contact me. Contact Mark Salek. We're kind of coordinating the events. Next month we're going to do an interesting event with you, right? We're going to do the beer.
Yeah,
so I already forgot about it. I think it was my idea. So basically what I want to do is have Bob give us a little talk about how he makes the beer, even though we all have to go through the tour and if you want to drink beer there and stuff. But to kind of go over where he's at, where he's going to be with the new building, because they're building a new building, kind of give us an update on that. And then bring out some flavors and, you know, the hops and the barleys and the other things you add to your beers. And we'll come up together. We'll create like a poll and we'll all create a Hack 100 in brew. And then Bob will brew it and batch it up, and then we'll drink it the next month.
The next month, it'll be available for everyone to taste. So, yeah, we'll break out some raw ingredients, some of the malts where people can actually see them, smell them, taste them, see what those different flavors impart in the beer. And we'll come up with some of the ingredients, and I'll work with our head brewer who's really good at this stuff. In fact, there's two small batches that I just did recently.
Yeah.
I brewed one with the mayor of Flemington. she likes Belgian style, so we did a Belgian pale ale, and she wanted to do something. I said, well, it's summertime. Let's come up with a fruit. Let's throw a fruit in there. So we did a raspberry puree, and I had a taste the other night, and it was just like drinking raspberry soda. It was very light. It's about 5%. It's the least beer-tasting beer I think I've made.
Oh, wow.
But it was extremely refreshing. A little bit of sweet and tartness from the raspberries and the yeast. It was just...
Yeah, I like the Belgian myself. That and the stouts, like your chocolate milk stout here.
That we're enjoying.
Definitely, yes. Bob, I guess... thank you for bringing some samples.
Well,
here.
It's almost 4th of July, right?
Yeah.
Let's start the weekend off right. And the other one I'd right here on Main Street is Main Street Manager, Manor. Tim Bebow is the host there.
Okay.
He runs that, and him and his wife, Marissa, and they came over. They wanted to have a beer that they could give as samples to their customers that come in. And I said, well, let's brew a beer. So we did a California Common. He wanted something that was bacon-y, a little smoky, so we added some smoke malt to it. And I'm going to be finishing that up this weekend. So we're going to crash it, carb it up, and I think that's real interesting. That should be a good beer. So I'm encouraging Tim to do it on a quarterly basis. Do something seasonal, something interesting.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Something he can, and because it's a collaboration with us, he can help promote us. We help promote him. It's a great way for us local businesses to collaborate and support each other.
So let's back up. So how did you get involved in this? I mean, you're doing IT stuff, or you're, you know, working in a cubicle, you know, you're doing the Dilbert lifestyle, you know, put project, IT project, IT project.
Well,
how did you get into this?
Well, I've been home brewing since the mid-90s.
Okay.
A little bit of history on that. If in New Jersey, you could make wine at home, but not until about the mid-90s. I think it was around 94, 95. There was a little word left out of a New Jersey law that says you can make wine at home, but they left that little word beer out. So legally, you were not allowed to make beer at home. And I remember talking to people at that time.
Crazy.
How do you do this? It didn't make sense. But once they opened it up, then there, if you remember, in the 90s, there was all these craft brew stores starting up because everyone wanted to get into the business here in New Jersey. The internet wasn't quite where it is today, where you can go online and order this stuff or figure it all out. I read a few books, ended up going to different stores, getting kits, and started brewing. Charles Papazian wrote a book, Home Brewing, and he's considered the godfather of home brewing. So the very first brew I did, it's called Rocky Raccoon's Honey Lager. It's like one of the best beers I made.
Huh.
And I always tell people your first beer is always your best. Same with the mayor. Right? We brewed it with him. I said, your first beer is always your best, right? And so I've been doing it on and off for the last since the mid-90s. Merck decided to send my job overseas, so I was kind of in between gigs, and my partner, Todd Becker, who approached me, and at that time he just said, hey, I'm going to open up a brewery here in Flemington.
Hmm.
And I'm like, awesome. My first reaction is I just got this great severance check. I said, are you looking for an investor?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I'm good. I said, well, you're looking for help? I'm not doing anything right now. I'll give you a hand. He goes, no, I'm good. I said, okay. 2 weeks later, he's knocking on my door. He goes, yeah, I need help.
Yeah.
And so that's when we created a partnership, did all of our legalese, get everything signed up, and that's how it started. So I was responsible for all the equipment and identifying what vendors. We actually engaged with a consultant that said, look, these are the things you need.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the equipment is actually made in China. And you can go direct and buy that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But my view on that, this is the first time I've ever done anything of this nature. I'm familiar with home brewing. Going from home brew to commercial brewing is
totally different world.
Very, very different. So much more processes, so much more equipment. I decided I'm not going to go overseas. I'm going to deal with somebody in the U.S. And they may source it from overseas, but if I have a problem, I call it one throat to choke. I'm going one place. They can't. If I can get fermenters from one vendor, a brew house from a third, now I know how to deal with it. At that time, I said, no, I didn't want finger points. So, no, that's their problem. No, that's their problem.
Sure. And,
so I went to one vendor, and that's how – so we selected a vendor. It took a while to get all that stuff ordered. Todd did all the paperwork and getting it through.
All the legalese for alcohol sales and all that stuff.
Yeah, so you got to file with the feds, and you got to get the Fed approval first, and they want to look at where the money's coming from because they don't want any illegal, get it from your friends who may have had the illicit connections or whatever. So everything we had to demonstrate where the money was coming from. And since it's two of us, it's easy. It was just Todd and his wife and myself and my wife. We're all partners in this. And so we got through that relatively without paying. Then once you get that, then you go through the state, and then you get approval from the state. And the state loves to say no to everything. So I remember the state coming through and asking. We were asking a ton of questions. And every question we asked, we'd get the response, yeah, no. that's an interesting question. We're not sure about that. So it's no.
Yeah. It's like when you request for permission, you're really seeking a denial.
So we learned, after about 15 minutes, I looked at Todd and gave him the wink and said, no more questions. Yeah. So we decided we didn't want to hear what the answer was already going to be. So one of the interesting challenges we had starting up, though, what do we want to name this thing? And so using my IT background, I set up a website called namethebrewery.com.
Okay.
And we wanted to get the community engaged. We thought we'd get a handful of names, and some of our silly friends obviously listed some names. But we got close to 500 names. And not only did we want a name, but the people had to write a name, but they had to have a story, because there's got to be something behind the name. That's the romance, right?
You have to have a story to tell.
Exactly.
Because everybody makes beer.
And what they do, every place I go, said, some names are obvious, right? And others are not. And you want to say, what's behind the name? Why did you name it this? So people come to us, and so the very first name we picked, and so we took the 400, we went through them, and we narrowed it down to 10. And then I updated the website, and we had people vote on it. Mm-hmm. And the number one, the winner was Conspiracy Brewing. And we were going to name that. So if you've ever been to the brewery, we got the downstairs and the loft. The downstairs, we were going to call it the Lunarscape, because all those theories about landing on the moon. Upstairs would have been the book repository.
Grassy knoll.
Exactly. So we had all these things. We were going to make beers after these things. And so we went to get the name trademarked. And we just missed it by about 45 days from a group up in Massachusetts. Somebody had already actually registered the domain name, and I was trying to buy it from him, and he's out in Colorado, and he works out of his house. And he's like, I call him up, and I'm like, look, we want this. Can we pay for it? He goes, no, I've already got my labels done, and I've patented my labels. And I'm like, yeah, you copyright labels, you don't patent them. So he had no idea that somebody up in Massachusetts has locked in the trademark. I said, this guy has no idea what's coming at him. So once you have the trademark, it's yours. And so the second name, which is a great name, and we love it, it's Lone Eagle Brewing. And the connection with Flemington, and we didn't want to call it Hunterdon Brewing. Well, that's already taken by a distributor. Or Flemington Brewing, because we wanted to have something that could spread. If it's become successful, we wanted it to be known just beyond Flemington. So Lone Eagle is the name we selected. And many people know Lone Eagle or Charles Lindbergh for the trial that took place here last century. And that was kind of what a lot of the history in Flemington's based on and is well known for. So Charles Lindbergh's call name or code name as a pilot was called the Lone Eagle.
Okay.
That is the connection. And so we like it. And, of course, our logo is a picture of an actual eagle to show that. And so our tagline is bold, brave, and adventurous. Those are the things that I think Charles Lindbergh really embraced, clearly, when he crossed the Atlantic as the first single solo flight. And we try to embrace that.
Are you the oldest brewery are there any other brewers in Hunterdon that are older than you?
Yeah, there's actually...
Who are the...
in Hunterdon. So Conclave over in Mineopening, they were ahead of us for about a year. So they're a craft brewery, and I think they're moving in that same area. But the oldest, in fact, the very first legal, legal, or to establish a brewery in New Jersey was the Ship Inn. The Ship Inn up in Milford, right on the Delaware River. There was a big race. Remember I was talking about 1995 when passed the law? All these brew pubs were racing who was going to be the first one to create a brewery. Ship Inn was number two, followed by, I think it was Trap Rock and Berkeley. There's a third one. They were like within weeks of each other, but I believe the Ship Inn was the actually first one.
I forgot about the Ship Inn. They've been around for
For a long time. They have an interesting brewing system. Theirs is open fermentation. So what that means is, and it's I think because the original owner was from England, he got one of those traditional, more English.
So it's like a just open vat of.
It is when you ferment. So you have to have a yeast we call high foculation. It's got to create a foam. And so when you have foam riding on top, none of that foreign bacteria can get in and spoil your beer.
Oh, okay.
And but he looks at it now, he wishes he had stuff that because you're kind of limited.
You're tied into what you can make then at that point.
And so they have certain yeast they can deal with, and I think they're trying to experiment and expand on some of the malts and things of that nature.
Okay. Well, we're up at a break here, so let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about some of the technical things that you've had to do in the brewery, some of the hardware, software stuff that you talked about with me earlier. So let's do a quick break here. Let's see, where is it?
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
White House Economic Advisor Larry Kudlow says the Trump administration is optimistic about trade talks with China, but they've still got a lot to work out.
We are hoping that China will toe its end of it by purchasing a good many of American imports, agriculture services, maybe industrial, maybe energy. It's not done yet, but we're hopeful.
Kudlow was speaking to reporters outside the White House. Now the president has backed off a threat to impose another round of tariffs on Chinese imports as the two sides continue to work out a trade deal. Edward Gallagher, the Navy SEAL, found not guilty of war crimes but found guilty of taking a photo of himself with a dead ISIS fighter, was sentenced by a military panel to a reduction in grade, 4 months confinement that was already served, and 4 months partial pay. And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who've agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-460-1663. That's 1-800-460-1663. Again, 1-800-460-1663.
All right, we're back. Quick weather update. See, I'll refresh the screen, see if the weather has changed. And no, it's 1 degree warmer, so it's 86. Again, thunderstorms coming in probably tonight. At least one or two thunderstorms in the area. High near 88 tonight. Patchy fog after 2 a.m., so watch out if you're out late. And tomorrow it's going to be isolated showers, thunderstorms after 1. So if you have the parade, it's in the morning. I know we have ours in Lebanon Borough starting at 9. I guess the fire trucks wake us up at 8 in the morning. They go around town waking everybody up and getting ready for the parade. And then they still don't come around till like 10. So you have a couple hours to get your chairs ready out on the hill. But then there's still a chance that... we'll have some firework issues, but it looks like we'll probably survive because it's only 20% chance. So, and that's it. So let's get back to with Bob. We're going to talk about what kind of technology he uses at the brewery. So let me pull up his microphone. That would help. Go ahead, Bob. So what is – so you talked about one of them was the keg tracker. So why don't you tell me about that?
So when we started off, we were self-distributing. And so we were out there, as most startup craft breweries of our size tend to do. Distributors are a little reluctant to sign on because they don't know – well, you don't have a brand name. You don't have a presence in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. How well is your beer going to be received? So they say start off self-distributed, build a brand, and then come have a conversation. Of course, they like that because you've now established a market for them.
Right. They don't want to waste their time.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, yeah. So our first year we were self-distributing, and what you have to realize is kegs are assets, and they're expensive assets, and you want to make sure you keep track of who has them. Mm-hmm. And so It started off as we would go out to our customers and we would drop off a keg. So I wrote a mobile app because we always carry a mobile phone with us. And I decided, let's write a mobile app. Every time we drop it off, we'll track what we dropped off. And when we pick it up, we track what we picked up.
Right.
And that worked relatively well to start with. And then we realized, well, what if we were to extend that, take it further upstream so that, you know, we could place an order and let the brewer know we placed an order with the customer and then they could fill the keg. Then we would be notified when the keg was filled and when we know it was ready to be delivered and then continue tracking the keg. So I took that all the way up to a fulfillment. So all the finished beer that we make goes into the app, and then we know what's available for sale. I remember going to one customer, and I brought some growlers, and they tasted the wares, and they're like, okay, what do we need to do business? And I said, all I need is your ABC number. It's your alcoholic beverage control. And he said, oh. So he goes to the wall, he puts those down, he goes, here's my number. I break out my phone. I put in their name, I put in their phone number, the customer name, phone number, put in their ABC number. He's like, and I just went in and hit the beer, and I said, how much you want? And he's like, what'd you just do? I said, well, I just created you as a customer, and I just ordered your beer for you. And he looked at me and goes, you got to be kidding. I said, you got to get this to other breweries because this is – I said, oh, they don't have that? And he goes, no. So,
oh, because you don't have to fill out paperwork and just, you know, okay, I'm a restaurant. I want to buy your beer, so then I got to fill out – all my credit information and all the W-9s, you get that from their ABC number.
I get there. Well, that's because I have, when I do my reporting to the state, I have to show who I sold the beer to, and it has to be legitimate.
Right.
So we sell things to them as in terms of wholesale. I don't tax them, but I need to know. The state wants to know who you're selling your beer to, and they want to make sure that who they're selling them to consumers, how much I sell. So they like to track alcohol very, very carefully.
Yeah, yeah.
And for lots of good reasons. So we created the software to do that. And it works quite well. Now, there's probably stuff in the marketplace to do that, but A, I have the capabilities.
Right.
B, I'm cheap because we're a startup. I'm trying to save money wherever we can. And so for me to spin up a server, and so in fact, it's connected directly to our website, which basically is out in the world that shows here's the beers, here's what's on tap, although it might be a little dated right
now.
Did
you still have those little Bluetooth buttons or whatever they... You were talking about using?
Oh, I'll get that. That's the geo-positioning stuff.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we've implemented that as well.
And okay, so that's separate from the keg tracker.
That's separate. So that's just for – I was thinking of implementing something like RFID to track it or putting a little barcode, but these kegs get beat up. We run them through a lot of cleaning process, getting something in a place that's going to be secure, that someone's not going to rip it off or it's not going to wash off over time. So those things, but it would be great just to scan it, saying this is going in, or have an RFID that with your phone. That
well, RFIDs are getting pretty good at. I actually work for a company that did RFID tags. They're down in Princeton, and they did a big luggage test at Newark Airport, and they passed. And they do their tag was more robust because of how it's made; it's flexible. So they were talking about doing garment tags and things like that.
Oh, interesting.
So we can talk later about that.
And I don't know how that works because the kegs are stainless steel, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if the metal...
Well, they were doing containers. They were talking about doing them for container for the ports. And just as long as you have them on the outside. I mean, the issue is more about the antenna. So if you had the antenna built into the inside of your delivery truck, then as you pass it through that antenna, it's going to read. So as soon as it leaves your truck, you know where... You know the GPS of the truck, so you know you're at the Ship Inn or the Milford restaurant or whatever. And you know you could assume that it left the truck to go be delivered to the restaurant.
Maybe I need to revisit this technology. But that's stuff like that. Just whatever makes life easier.
Yeah.
And now we have a distributor, and so it's less important. We still have a handful of house accounts, we call them, but we have distributors. And we're now in PA as well.
Oh wow!
Outside of Philly. So that's what the keg tracker did. So it was really from a finished beer good all the way through to tracking our case from delivery, signing up customers. It became less important as we got distributors, but we still have a dozen accounts that we like to track with.
Do you do that then? You use that data, though. You're using it to determine how popular beer was and know how to schedule your beer.
So we know how quickly it's moving. It's a great way to track beers that are fast selling, things that are slower selling. What do we need to – what's going to run out? How long – before we need to brew it again, if we're going to brew it again. So we have some staples that we keep on.
So what's the spread? Like, if you take your most popular beer and your least popular beer, like, are we talking, like, months of consumption? Or?
So I would say we did probably one or two beers that we just put on. And it's hard to judge because it's something that's on all the time. I'd have to track it by the particular batch, which becomes a little bit more challenging. But things that we've done one-off on, we just did a summer blonde with a local honey.
Yeah, that was very good. I had that at the last meetup.
Yeah, that we brewed less than a month ago. And so that was probably, I would say our quick beers go in about 6 weeks. For
and that's how many gallons in a batch?
310 gallons. Okay. And so I'd have to convert.
So that's about 2,400 pints?
Yeah, so it's quite a bit. Now, some of that will get to our distributor, wants some of that, and restaurants hear about it. And they say, yeah,
but it's still, people are drinking it. So it's like it's roughly 2,400 drinks per se. Yeah.
And so that, and we did a mango milkshake IPA that just went over really well. We're going to brew that one again. We're tweaking that base recipe because we have some other interesting ideas we want to do with this milkshake concept that others have not yet done. But our brewer's excited to do that. So the apps we develop, even though it's on a mobile phone, it all integrates into our website. So our brewer could be doing a new beer, go to his mobile phone, add it as a new beer, and say it's now on tap, and it would show up on the website. So the database, they're all integrated, the mobile phone app and the database. So you were asking about the geo-positioning earlier. So if you remember one of my presentations for the Hack 100, which we didn't complete, was the first Hack 100, which is, I called it My Town, which would allow consumers as they walk by storefronts that say, hey, you're near me, let me give you a coupon or some incentive.
Yeah.
And so I've actually implemented that at the brewery. So when you download the app, and downloading apps, everyone knows, painful now. I got enough apps on my phone. Why do I need another
one?
And what incentive am I going to get by downloading your app? So what we do is we if you download the app, and I have to put the new release out yet, you would get a coupon that would give you 50% off a pint or a flight.
Now, that was only initially Apple, right?
That's right. But
do you have it on Android then?
Android is an interesting animal. I'm working on that. I'm looking at different languages and platforms. So I've been playing with Flutter and versus native.
So I'm a Pixel phone user myself.
So it has to
be Android or else I won't download it.
I know there's a lot of people out there. I've been trying to get them to say, hey, I have the iOS.
You know, there's a whole high school right down the road here. And I'm sure there's more than just Lorenzo.
Yes. Somebody can do an Android app. Here's the APIs you got to run through. I said, here's the keys to get the APIs.
Just come over to the brewery, even though you're not 21.
You're
legally allowed to be in the brewery. You just can't drink.
That's correct.
Just find Bob if you want to get your
Android.
It's basically a quick way to add a resume builder right there. Do some volunteer work because I know like high school students need volunteer hours for National Honor Society. This would be a perfect opportunity if anybody out there is from Fleming, from one of the high schools that wants to do programming.
And if it works, and I'll give you the APIs, I'll give you the rundown of it, and we might be able to throw in some money to help you go to college or something like that. Give you a little incentive. So
it's definitely. I think I'm big on that, especially because we saw it from our own child's, side of it, because he's into filmmaking, and so he volunteered to do the Habitat for Humanity to film their building houses.
Oh, wow, cool.
So, and it was a way for him to get service hours to get into the Honor Society. And that was, because it's hard if you have somebody who doesn't, you can kind of lead him to do some charitable stuff, but it's something that he's passionate about. So it was like perfect mix for him. And so he filmed them building the houses. He interviewed families. He interviewed some of their charity stuff. They do like a fun run. And then he pared everything down to like 5-minute videos for them so they could use to sell the service. And so use that as especially in your line of work. I mean, even though you can't have them come as customers, they could definitely.
Look, the basic app is simple, right? But when we get into it, we have a few beacons in there. When you start doing some of the geopositioning, that starts getting the other challenging piece that we do. One of the fun things we'd love to do at the brewery is get our customers engaged.
Right.
And so there's a feature in there that was this past year's, not this, but the previous year, Hack on where we were doing real-time polling.
Right.
So we call it Tap It or Dump It, where customers can come in and we put on a small batch
of
beer.
Yeah, let's say it again because that's a good name.
Tap It or Dump It. And by the way, I have that trademarked.
There you go.
I went out and said, when I talked to some people, they said, this is a great idea. I said, I better go trademark the idea. So I do. I have that trademarked.
Wow, great.
So we want to have our consumers come in, use their phone, and vote. And if you say, yeah, we love it, tap it, the next dialogue that comes up or the next prompt that says, well, why don't you give us a name? And then we would vote on the name. So then it becomes really customer engaging. It's just kind of fun things to do. And I think that's what makes us a little different than a lot of other breweries, because, one, I'm a techie, right?
I love this
stuff. I've been involved with it. I've been doing it for years and years. Graduated as an engineer.
Yeah.
Got a master's in computer science. So I just it's hard
but
for
But it's
me
more
to
than just software. Like, you have in your cold room, you use Raspberry Pi. So now you're talking hardware, not just software.
Yeah. A number of years ago, somebody turned me on to this, and it was like a Linux. And I'm a big Unix guy, AT&T. Yeah. You know, Linux. So when they come up with Linux and they put it on the size of a credit card, and then they give you some I.O., I said, wow, the world is now open. You can do all kinds of fun things.
Yeah.
And so one of the things we built early on, I custom built our cold room. And so I wanted to make sure it was going to be stable.
Right.
And so I had it polling every 30 seconds or a minute, what's the temperature of your cold room? And if something went wrong,
right,
I would get an alarm. I'd get a text message on my phone saying, hey, your cold room's unusually warm. You might want to check it out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the Raspberry Pi, you built in these temperature sensors and UI, just basic I/O. And then I connected it to Wi-Fi and had it broadcast up to my website, so mm-hmm. I could actually open up a web page and say, here's the last 24 hours, here's all the readings that took place.
Nice. Okay, so we need to take a quick break here, and then we'll get right back to finish up with Bob, and then also we have to do we'll do our little historical innovation story. And then we'll be done. So, again, this hour is flying by today. So let me get the commercials going.
Oh, wow. Folks, you know what that music is. That's the time for modern design.
This blue thing is a really new trend. A lot of the designers are trying to introduce blue as a new cabinet color.
This is topical for you guys. This is really topical.
And the mother said, well, I'd like her room to be gray. And the little girl said, Mom, gray is the color of depression.
Hi, this is Rich Scuderi of Modern Design. We're on live every Wednesday from 2 to 3, and you're listening on WHCR-DB.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org. When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
All right, we're back. And again, we're here with Bob King, who's the co-owner of Lone Eagle Brewery. And we were talking about his brewery and the apps that he uses. So what do you have in development for the future?
So one of the things, reporting is a critical part of what we have to do with the state and this, and for the federal government. So we talked about finished goods through the keg tracking. I'm going further upstream. So now it's funny, some of the vendors we order our raw materials from our malts, our hops, yeast, and that nature. Some of them have decent websites. Others are, send me an email of what you want. And so I'm like, well, now I'm starting to think, how do I leverage that to my advantage, right? So what I'm doing is starting from allowing my brewer to go in and say, I'm going to brew these beers. I need these raw materials. Order the raw materials from my website that I've built. It's going to send an email off to the vendor. And then when it arrives, he says, yes, it's there. Now it's added to our inventory. Now I have an inventory tracker. And when he brews a recipe with those goods, it's going to pull it out of inventory. So now I have a whole inventory management system.
Oh, wow.
And so if I ever get it ordered, I can say, well, here's the brews I've done. Here's the things.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, we're going to start tracking the beers as they're going through the process. And there's certain data we want to collect.
So I can go online and see, okay, my favorite chocolate stout is only 2 weeks away?
Oh, that's a great idea. Actually, I can do that. And so,
yeah, why not?
I'm thinking about, no, we want to know the pH
levels. Especially like those rum barrel age ones.
Oh,
those are the best.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So our anniversary beer is coming up, and that's going to be a special beer. And aged in bourbon barrels. But it's going to be a lighter beer for the summer.
Like a countdown clock, you know?
Yeah, no, that's a great idea. So, we want to do it for – so as a beer is going through fermentation, is it on track? We can compare it to previous brews. Are we ahead or behind fermentation schedule?
Okay.
Did we finish out at the same gravity level that we wanted to as previous one? So we're going to start getting – right now, we've done everything. It's been fundamentally paper-based, and I want to get it completely automated.
Okay. And then you also are expanding physically as a building, right?
We are. It's a good problem to have, right? So one of the things we're out of space. If you've been to the brewery and you look inside in the evenings, you see our brewing area is filled with raw materials, cans, things of that nature. We're not able to keep up. We're
cutting back.
It's a great problem to have. And so I'd rather have this problem than the other problem. So the building right next door to us, we're expanding our manufacturing. Fundamentally, it just be for beer to get out the door. Primarily, we're keeping our tasting room. We love the tasting room. We invested quite a bit of money into that. That stays the same. It just allows me to add more fermenters.
So for people like me, it's not going to change.
That's correct.
It's just there's going to be another building that's next door that makes stuff. But there's other stuff going in that building, right?
On the other side that we're not involved with. And so we're going to be careful from a ABC perspective what I am. So Lone Eagle is not involved. There's been discussion of things like an entertainment center and food court, but that's a separate building on a separate property.
Okay, so the building that's the footprint of that building right now is only going to be your stuff.
No, the footprint. So what you don't see the footprint and the developers who built the property merged. So the side that's close to us, there's a private road between us that has to remain. It was deeded since 1945.
Okay.
On the other side of that is the building. A third of that is part of our same block and lot.
Okay.
And so it is going to be part of us. There'll be a firewall between the buildings, so there's no entrance and exit.
Okay.
You have to actually go outside and go next door to the food court or whatever that's going to be.
Okay.
We're not involved with that. So 2/3 of that building. And when you sit down at ground level, it doesn't look that big. But when you take an aerial view, it's going to be a big building. So we're going to have about 5,000 square feet just to add to manufacturing.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
So we're going to be adding fermenters. Larger fermenters. We're going to brew at our place and just pump the wort over. It's not beer; it's wort. So they got all upset on. Well, you can't pump beer across the street. I said, well, it's a private street. Of course, getting back to my statement earlier, everything's no.
That's crazy. Like literally, like they're worried that you're going from one building to another. Like it's a speakeasy or something.
And they said, well, whatever you produce over there, you can't sell out of your place. I said, I said that's just for outdoor consumption. We want to make it there, package it, and get it out the door. That's the whole. We just can't. And everything that's made in our place will be continued to be consumed on premise. So we're looking at fermenters, canning line, another cold space, barrel aging, place to store our raw goods. Yeah. So just
you're just expanding your operation is what you're
exactly
doing. I
right.
mean, it should all be one.
This is a wonderful.
But federally, you could do that because you told me the one time that there's like a 2-mile radius or something that you
don't have to get. Even in the state, you don't have to get a separate permit. You still have to file with this what you're doing, but you don't have to go file. I'm sorry, file for a separate license.
Okay.
Now, because of what I'm doing, it's a separate location. They're saying you have to do this, and what becomes more confusing to the state is like, well, it's one block and lot. How can you have two licenses for the same piece of price? These are the things you have to kind of work your way through.
So you think if you started over, would you have not gone to that location, or is that location something that was because of the, you know, middle of Flemington, probably low cost?
That's a great. We wanted to do it in Flemington. We thought at that time, if you recall, I don't know how familiar you are with the Roger Brooks study. If you've heard of that here in Flemington, there's a consultant that they brought in that helps revitalize towns that Flemington. We thought, wow, this is. We saw the Roger Brooks, and Roger Brooks got up and gave this wonderful presentation. And he said, if you don't have a craft brewery in this town, you better get one. And we were already on the way of doing that. So we really thought we were right on the very tip of the wave. We were going to catch this wave that's going to help this town, help revive it. So we still believe in Flemington. We still believe it's going to turn around. It's taken a little longer than expected.
Yeah. Okay. So before I run out of time here, I just wanted to, as I promised, some innovation stories from the past. So I found the top five innovators from our founding fathers in honor of the 4th of July weekend. So number five, according to – this is Alex Knapp's list from Forbes. Number five is George Washington. Everybody knows him as the, you know, first president, but he also was the inventor of the threshing barn. So he created a method for threshing wheat that was safer and easier using a barn that was shaped in like a hexagon shape. Huh. And it was a safer way. It was a 16-sided barn where the horses would thresh the grain in a circle on the second level of the barn. The horses were made to continually run so they wouldn't go to the bathroom on the grain, I guess. And there were gaps in the floor that the treaded wheat would then come out through for easy collection. So he created a method for that. Number four was Ben Franklin for his bifocals. Everybody knows about Ben Franklin inventing the bifocals.
Not electricity? So,
well, he didn't invent electricity. That's later. We'll tell you about that. Number three was Thomas Jefferson for his cipher wheel. So the cipher wheel, which is like a code-making device, Thomas Jefferson actually invented one.
Cool.
That's actually attributed to a French person, but because he never really marketed it per se. So it ended up becoming more of a French invention. Thomas Paine, actually the one who wrote Common Sense, he's famous for the second ever iron bridge. Up until, you know, the 1700s, bridges were made of stone or wood. And he's like, well, we can make an iron bridge. So he actually had the longest iron bridge at one point. And
well, that's they had facilities to actually manufacture iron.
Right. It was back in it was a 240-foot span.
Wow.
That opened in England over the Wear River, and it was open until 1927 before they had to replace it.
That's
a couple hundred years.
That was just had to be wrought iron. I mean, they
and his other thing that was really impressive about him is that Common Sense sold to 4% of the United States population. So if you correlate that to today, that's 14 million books. And no book sold more than 1 million copies last year. So imagine that's how popular Common Sense was.
Wow.
So talk about your viral hit. And that was within 3 months he sold that many copies. 120,000 copies. And then, of course, Benjamin Franklin for the lightning rod.
Ah.
So that's what he was. But
dude, I didn't even read your stuff, and I kind of guessed.
So,
what was number one?
That was number one. But who do you think the only president – there's only one president that has a patent. Do you know who it is and what it's for?
Oh, that's a trivia question. I believe wasn't it Harding?
We're running out of time.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
David's waiting in the wings. It's Abraham Lincoln.
Really?
He has a patent for a way to lift boats over shoals and sandbars because his boat got stuck on a sandbar, and he figured, hey, let's create these air chambers that lift up the boat and bring you over the sandbar.
How clever. The only president.
Yeah, the only
I'm
president.
Sure he has Donald Trump. He's got plenty. He just
well, he didn't have time for that. he's busy making everything great again. So, all right. So, quick thank you to everybody. Bob King, thank you for coming.
Happy to be here.
Thank you to all the fans on YouTube and Facebook. Thank you to the Chamber, Mark, the gang back at Zero Surge, my family, and the rest of you innovators out there. Again, the original meaning of innovator was that you were a rebel. So keep rebelling against the doubters and make your ideas a reality.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As preparations continue for the Salute to America event being held in Washington, D.C. on July 4th, some Democratic lawmakers are saying the president is turning a traditionally nonpartisan event into a campaign rally, to which White House Deputy Press Secretary Hogan Gidley says,
"That's absolutely ridiculous. This is all about a salute to America. The president is not going to get political. He's going to celebrate the greatest country, the greatest idea in the history of the world, and that is the United States of America."
According to AAA, more than 41 million Americans are expecting to hit the road and travel over the 4th of July holiday. As far as what folks can expect to pay for gas, Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com tells Fox News,
"Unfortunately, motorists that are taking to the road are going to be greeted by higher prices in almost every state except for the West Coast, where gas prices keep moving lower."
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Blue Star Medicated Ointment gets 5-star reviews from our loyal users for fast relief of the pain and itch of almost any skin irritation.
Blue Star soothes insect bites and fungal infections.
It really works on the summer rashes I get every year.
I had psoriasis on my elbows. Blue Star worked wonders.
Amazing stuff. Smear a bit on and the itch is gone.
Look for the white box with the Blue Star in the first aid section. Feel Blue Star work fast or your money back.
Here's a great deal on MyPillow. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, type in promo code USA, you'll get two MyPillow premium pillows for $69.98. Now, that's only $34.99 a pillow. You will not get that price anywhere at retail. It's the lowest price ever offered on radio or TV. And like all MyPillow products, 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the two-pack special, use my promo code USA.
Nike is releasing a statement on the company's decision to pull the American-themed